Hello and welcome to the Taskmaster podcast. Yes, you should know what this is by now. The TV show Taskmaster. It's a fun show where Greg Davis, the Taskmaster, sets tasks for five comedians, or in this case, four comedians and a producer, and his Taskmaster's assistant helps out with all the tasks. That's Alex Horn, but he's secretly the genius behind it. If you didn't know those basic things, then you shouldn't be here. Go away, educate yourself on Taskmaster, watch the episodes, and then come back and listen. This, I'll be honest, if you've not seen Taskmaster before and you don't know what it is, this podcast is going to be absolutely baffling. Because here we chat to people who've been on the show, people who are fans of the show, about specific episodes, specific tasks. We chat through the scoring, all of that sort of stuff. But look, guys, sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes we just have a lovely chat about Taskmaster memories. Sometimes we end up talking about something completely different. It sometimes spins off like life, guys. You can't predict life. What you can predict is that if you email taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com, you will be able to send us a question. We will read those emails and we will perhaps pitch your question to our guest. I'll be telling you next week's guest in the outro to this podcast. So listen to the podcast, enjoy the podcast, and we'll see you afterwards. This week's guest is with the brilliant Ben Bailey-Smith, aka Doc Brown. I will be calling him Ben during the episode because that's his name. Doc Brown is his stage name. Yes, that's how he was known on Taskmaster, but it's the same man. So we will see you afterwards, after a lovely chat with Ben Bailey-Smith. Welcome, Ben, to the Taskmaster podcast. Thanks very much for coming on.
When was the last time I saw you, Ed? I'm trying to, like, in real life. I don't mean like Zoom life. Not that I've seen you on Zoom, but would it have been circuit days, maybe?
Definitely circuit days. It would have been at some sort of gig, but a nice gig, I reckon.
Like up the creek Sundays, that kind of.
Yeah, it almost certainly would have been an up the creek Sunday gig, or like Greenwich Comedy Festival or something like that. A nice gig where no one's going to be mean to you. That sort of gig.
That's where you would have found me most of the time towards the end. You know, when you get deeper into circuit and you get offered those gigs, and now you're making a bit of money, and you get offered those, and you're just like, you're about to say yes, and then you're just like, no, fuck. No, that gig's always horrible. I'm not doing that.
When you get into a position where you can do nice stuff, that's all. Man. That's all I do now. Still, just nice stuff and podcasts.
Yeah. And you see all the comics that you realize when you were younger had the similar frame of mind to you. They just want to be able to do their comedy in a wholesome, nice, warm environment, like where even if they struggle, it's gonna be okay. Do you know what I mean? And to the Up the Creek reference, we should probably tell our listeners, like, Up the Creek, this club in Greenwich in southeast London, it had like a weekend, as a lot of the bigger clubs did, of comedy laid out Friday, Saturday, and did they do Thursday? I'm not sure, but Friday, Saturday, and
Friday
Sunday.
And Saturday for sure, yeah.
And you know, if you were sort of doing your thing as a young comic and holding your own in lots of different types of situations, Up the Creek would call. You know, because Friday and Saturday, they're amazing gigs, but they're fucking tough.
Yeah.
And then bizarrely, on the Sunday, they would like stick a little chair and a lamp on stage. And all of a sudden you could like tell stories, you could get into like abstract anecdotes. But Friday and Saturday, it was like, if you don't bring your A game, there's a stag do that's going to make you want to slit your wrists. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It was stag dudes who'd come in from Kent and they were all there to shout at someone. And when it went well, that was pretty amazing, that gig.
Of course. It was kind of better than the Sunday gig in the way that you felt I defeated them. Like I did it.
Yeah, exactly. Occasionally one of the rowdy people from the Friday or Saturdays would end up in a Sunday crowd for some reason.
Yes.
And start trying to shout at you. And then everyone around them would be like, please be quiet, we're trying to listen to what this man's putting across here. He's got some angles that we're very interested in, and they would be so baffled.
He's just referenced Naomi Klein. We want to hear more.
we all did those gigs, Ben, so we could eventually get to the point where we were invited to do nice things like Taskmaster, which you did very, very early. Series 2, we're talking Series 2, Episode 3 today specifically, Ben. Can you remember being offered Taskmaster? Were you aware of the show before it was offered, or was it a new thing going into it?
I didn't know anything about it. I mean, people who know me closely will know I don't do panel shows or quiz shows, not because I think that I'm above them, but they put the fear of God in me. Like I you know me, like we gigged together for years. Like my style was never as like, you know, whip smart as those guys that can just like come up with a response, you know, that Paul Merton thing of just like bang, like
yeah,
I'm gonna say something on national TV in response to this, it's gonna be hilarious. I always felt like I'm not built for those quiz shows. I need time to sit with people and say, this is what I'm about. I used to do this, now I do that. It's part of my story, you know. I just thought, no, I'm just going to do my stand-up, and if there's an acting thing that comes about, great. And that was my rule. So with Taskmaster, it was one of the few jobs that it didn't come through an agent or anything like that.
Yeah.
It came through Alex. Like, I don't know if you remember, but in our circuit days, I used to gig with the Horn Section a lot, his band.
Yeah.
And I'm good mates with a couple of boys in the band, you know, colleagues and drinking buddies. And Alex just called me direct and he said, I've got this idea. It's almost like a Japanese type, I don't think he used the word torture, but, challenge yeah. type show.
Yeah.
And I was like, bro, it's not really my jam. And he was like, come and have a coffee. Let's just chat it over. And of course, anyone who knows Alex Horn knows that he's one of the nicest, loveliest souls in comedy. So it is hard to say no to Alex Horn.
Yeah.
And he broke it down and he said how much fun it would be and all this improv stuff that I thought wasn't that, you know, that pressurized mock the week environment where it's like,
yeah,
say this line, say that line. Very much like he was like, be yourself, you know, that's what's going to be funny. And I said, you know, I do it as a favor to you. So I did it for Alex. And I had no idea how badly he duped me. And if I could find him today, I would wring his neck. It was one of the worst experiences of my life from start to finish. I've been sent a bunch of stuff by your producer, like to watch the episode and read stuff about it. I didn't even open it. I never want to be reminded of this show, but I thought I'd come on your podcast because it might be interesting to get that angle. Do you know what I mean? Somebody who
hates aware. I am aware that you've not watched it back. You don't want to be reminded of it, but I am going to remind you about this episode in particular in punishing detail today, Ben.
Great, fantastic.
What are your abiding memories? You say it was a terrible experience. Was there any particular moments that stuck
absolutely.
Out for you?
I mean, when your team told me what episode it was, I obviously didn't remember because I'd like wiped it from my brain. But when they said one of the tasks, which was to impress the mayor, my skin crawled because I remember that day like it was yesterday. Like, it was horrendous. The thing that really annoys me about it, thinking back, was that I had a great idea and I just couldn't put it into motion because of what do you call it? Compliance, you know, on TV, you know, you got to be careful with certain things.
Right.
So my original idea to impress the mayor.
Please tell us. I thought you weren't gonna tell us the idea.
No,
we want to hear it.
So
it sounded like an excuse,
it,
Ben.
I'm sure everybody who's listens to the podcast has watched the episode. What ended up happening is I ended up singing a Tony Bennett song to the mayor, which was a desperate last second decision. And I'll tell you for why. Because the original idea I had was I was gonna go out. We were in like one of those places that's the last stop on the Metropolitan line in London.
And anyone who knows London. Was it Amersham?
Amersham. Anyone who knows London knows that the last stop on the Metropolitan line isn't even in London. It's like Mordor. It's just this other world. Anyway, so like we're out there in the sticks and we're filming in an office block in a town centre. So we get the task. And I know a lot of people probably think Taskmaster's fake or whatever. You don't know shit. You don't know anything. They just throw you in there. So you get the task. I'm like, oh, great. This is. And I was looking out the window trying to come up with inspiration, and I saw like loads of kids going to like, you know, the town centre mall type thing, hanging out and stuff on the streets. All the little wannabe roadmen and all of that out in the sticks. And I thought, you know what would be great? I'll go and get like three or four of the roughest looking boys that I can find, right? They're the roughest looking ones, like hoods up, man bag, Nike Air, TNs. Do you know what I mean? Like smoking dirt weed outside a mall. Get four of those guys.
And I like the man bag is now
the
part
man
of
bag.
The
you know,
rough
the little,
uniform.
Be like a little LSE like man bag, like hungover.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, get four of those boys, get them to like pull the hoods tight, mask up, and run in to the mayor's office, like just like all guns blazing. Like they're just gonna do this mayor, like he's just gonna get moved to, right? And then I like appear from the kitchen and like take him down, you know, and save the mayor like from these hoodlums. That was my original plan. And the producer's like, you know, you can't really involve, like, you know, it could go to its up. So
that's amazing.
I suddenly, you know, the feeling that I have when I think about the episode is like, remember when you were in drama class in secondary school and they go into little groups and come up with a performance. And you go into your little group and you've got those three kids you don't really have a relationship with. And then the teacher's like, right, let's go. Everyone sit down in the audience. Here we go. Like Ben's group. You know that feeling?
Yeah.
That feeling there. That's what I had, where it's like, okay, cool. 5 minutes. Let's get going. I was like, fucking hell. So
Your plan B was singing a Tony Bennett song. And from that original plan A as well. There's never been a bigger drop off of quality.
the shift there, I thought, was quite impressive, and also a good example of my psyche and like where I am in life. Like I just such I could so easily flip between the world of like weed smoking 15-year-olds mugging a mayor to singing a 50 staple by an 85-year-old jazz legend. Do you know what I mean?
It's pretty impressive as well that they turned it down, that the producers said, you can't do that, because it's rare that they do that. And for something to be so edgy that they had to go, we can't do that, that mayor might actually shit himself.
I think it was a couple of things. It was the level of chaos that I wanted.
Yeah.
And the fact that it involved a lot of, you know, people who weren't involved in the production. So
come in, I'm making a TV show, promise.
So I've got a minute to make a decision, and I went for what I always do in like a drunk karaoke. I sing Tony Bennett. So that was, a lot of people won't see like what the machinations were behind that, but that's what it was. And I've never felt more embarrassed or traumatized in a performance setting, I think, in my life than that.
I know I go from rags to riches. If you would only say you can. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire.
Do you have any nice memories? Do you have any like favorite tasks? Was there one or two that you thought, I did a good job at that, it came off well, I've enjoyed this evening?
Not really. I don't remember doing anything well. Oh, actually, I do. And the horrible irony of this
things.
Is another one behind production that people never would have seen. We went to a park, and there was a skimming challenge, and I was like, I can fucking skim. I've been skimming since I was like 5-6 years old. Like in Cornwall, you know, like I can skim in rough water, still water, you know, small waves, big waves. Like I'm a skimmer. Sparkling water, you know, you get that effervescence, just brushes it up a little bit, gives you an extra bounce. You might get a 7 instead of a 6. And they're asking me to skim, I think it was like chocolate digestives, on a completely still pond. And I was like, this is my task. I'm going to nail this. And of course I did. But it didn't make the cut. They didn't use it. I guess it was a bit of a boring one. Oh, do you know what I mean?
So
not crazy
frustrating.
Enough. So, yeah. Like, I do remember enjoying that task. But other than that, every time I went in, it was packed full of dread. And the whole series really made me reevaluate how I feel about, you know, The Apprentice or Bake Off or, you know, Joe Lycett, Sewing Bee, or anything like that. You know, when your people do something and you're like, you fucking idiot. Why are you doing that?
Yeah, idiot.
Look at this guy. He's got like two brain cells. But what you don't realize is until you get in that position where the pressure's on and you start thinking about millions of people watching you, it's mad how quickly your brain just like turns to jelly. And you just like, there was an episode where we had to get stuff across a river. And I was like throwing shit like in a shopping trolley, got the shopping trolley in the water. It was a mess. And there was a bridge. I didn't even see the bridge.
We had emails about that.
I didn't even see the fucking bridge. We had emails asking you
about the trolley task where you didn't notice the bridges that you could have walked over. Francesca says it's her favourite task of all time and it still makes her cry with laughter. So you're still bringing joy. You're still bringing all that joy, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, Ed? Actually, that is the thing, now that I think about it, that I got joy from Taskmaster, because aside from rolling a joint for the in-betweeners and the song that I made about making a cup of tea, I'd say various tasks on Taskmaster is like the number three thing that I'm stopped for on the street every day. I do like that. Like, people appreciate how shit I was, you know what I mean? And then, like, I think I was probably quite real on it. Like, I don't remember like performing or being self-conscious, really. I was very, what you saw in there was definitely Ben, do you know what I mean? It was definitely just me.
It's very difficult, I think, for anyone to put up any facade.
Yeah,
I actually don't think you're bad at the task though, Ben, because there's loads of highlights. I think every episode you have a pretty impressive moment. The nursery rhyme fish rap, where you punch the fish.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess that was maybe something no one else would have done on the show. So exactly. Maybe I'm proud of that, yeah. Why not?
Sup, kids? You know, a lot of these nursery rhymes chat pure gibberish fantasy. This one's got some real talk for you, yeah? Hashtag true story. Yo, it goes 1, 2 to the 3, 4, 5. Once I caught a fish alive, I said 6, 7 to the 8, 9, 10. Then I let that little prick go again. You say,
kid, you let it go.
Motherfucker bit my finger, bro.
Which finger did it bite?
This little finger on my right.
We come to the prize task, Ben. The category on this one was best dinner guest. Do you remember who you brought in for this? Because it's one of the rare prize tasks where you have to bring in a person.
I think I brought in my DJ at the time, who was, you know, he was opening for my my tour shows. So used to have
The Last Skeptic.
The Last Skeptic, yeah. Used to have a little rave before and after my my tour shows, you know, play some hip hop and have a good time. And he's someone who is, you know, intrinsically linked to comedy as well. So I was able to sort of bounce off of him on my tour shows. He's actually the younger brother of Tien and Duyeb, who's another colleague of ours from the circuit days.
What a talented family! I think this was a great choice of dinner guest, Ben. I think you did a good job here, because you know he's clearly got stories.
Yes,
he's out there. He's doing stuff. He's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think compared to some of the other, I'll remind you of what the other dinner guests were. John tried to bring in Greg Davis to try and suck up to him, basically, which immediately for me is not points. Yeah, it's a complete fail. That did get 1 point, so he's obviously saw right through him. Richard Osman brought in a Great Dane.
That's cool, because Richard Osman is kind of, I see him as like the Great Dane of humans.
Yeah, he definitely is. He definitely is. Now, I mean, I watched the episode back. I can now picture the Great Dane. He is basically a Great Dane, isn't he? Sat there on a laptop next to Alexander Armstrong. I love it. But I don't want a Great Dane at a dinner party. That got 2 points deservedly. They stink and they slobber. No, thank you. I do enough of that. You got 3 points. And I think he said the Last Skeptic looked like a criminal, so he didn't want to have him at a dinner party.
Yeah. Which, that's right.
He must have known they were just back behind the curtain waiting. So not a nice thing to hear. Catherine Ryan brought in her own sister. I mean, you can't argue with that. She seems like a fun lady. I believe Catherine described her as having no filter, which is pretty good in a dinner party situation.
Yeah, and her and The Last Skeptic got on very well behind the scenes. There's a lot of flirting.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. That's nice. I hope the Great Dane didn't get in the way.
Some people went home happy.
Joe Wilkinson brought in Henry, who is Britain's sixth strongest man.
Basically, everything Joe did just cracked me up. But that didn't surprise me because everything Joe's ever done has cracked me up. Like, I remember being, you know, a green young comic in the, what did they used to call it? The thing where you live with three other comics in the first year at Edinburgh and you do 15 minutes each.
Comedy Reserve.
The Comedy Reserve.
Yeah, Comedy Reserve. Yeah. That's the one, yeah.
So I'm there like trying to work out how to do stand up, and I think on one of my days off I went and watched two episodes of MASH, which is
Joe Wilkinson's old sketch show
with Diane Morgan, and I just never seen anything like it. Like the sort of the chemistry they had, and just how weird they both were. But they both, I mean, I've been a fan of each of them ever since. But he just had this thing where anything he did behind that beard just made me chuckle, and that's never changed. So one other like positive I remember from Taskmaster was just watching Joe do his thing, you know.
I think arguably had a worse time than you in terms of points and things like that. We had him on the podcast 2 weeks ago. And he was talking about the infamous potato throw where he was disqualified.
It was controversial, wasn't it?
Very controversial. Most controversial, I'd say, because he was sent out the room to let you guys decide on whether he should get the points or not. And you and John both turned against him.
That's right, yeah.
Is that something you regret now?
Far funny gets you. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't get me wrong. I find the guy funny, but when it gets down to like raw competition and you're just desperate for points, yeah, absolutely, you turn yourself. My daughter said to me, "What would your tactics be in the Hunger Games today?" She said that to me today. She
That's
said,
amazing.
"Right, would you go all out, kill everybody, or would you like alley up? Would you pal up?" And I was like, "Oh, I'd alley up definitely. Like, I'd alley up." And she was like, and then what would happen when it gets down to the last two? And I'd just be like, you know what? It's me and you. It's me and you. I just blow the dude away. And she's like, but what if you had a little girl like Katniss has? And I was like, all right, let's just end this conversation now because it's getting too deep.
Too heavy.
But Joe was like, yeah, he was like the Hunger Games ally in that situation. He had to be taken out.
But it was sneakier than that. You weren't just face to face with him. You shot him when he was out of the room. When he came back in, you blamed it on Osman.
Very possible.
It's true. I've seen it.
Joe, yep. I gave your fellow contestants the opportunity to save you, and they were unable to conclusively do that. Therefore, on this occasion, I'm going to have to say that your attempt was null and void. I apologise. Oh.
You did our best, right?
That is harsh. That's harsh.
Let's come to the first task, which we've already discussed in detail. We're going to run through what everyone else did, though. Impress this mayor, you have 20 minutes. Now, I'm going to say, Ben, I completely agree with you. I've done Taskmaster, and all of the ones I hated were the ones where you were put on the spot like and you were forced to come up with something creative, because creativity is our job, right? So under that pressure, there's even more pressure because people are expecting it to be good.
Absolutely. But don't you think it's a weird thing, though, being a comic? Because we are all expected to be quick on the draw and really funny all the time. And it is a skill that every single one of us has, even the most heavily written comics. I believe that. You can't write a joke, even if it's rehearsed a million times and repeated 100 times a day. You can't do that without having funny bones. You just can't do it. It'd be a castle built on sand. That said, I think those of us who aren't Ross Noble, do you know what I mean?
Famously not.
Who aren't, like, you know, known for improvisation, it can be our biggest fear to be put on the spot, despite the fact that we know deep down we can be funny in any situation. But the key thing is the situation, right? If we feel a couple of huge psychological negatives. Like, number one, there's 14 million people watching. Number two, I don't know, like, what's going to be put in front of me. And number three, it's win or lose. There's a competitive element to this, and I'm a very competitive person. But I, like, to not have the tools, to not have the preparation to compete, that makes me feel anxious.
I think the mayor was a hard audience member. I think he wasn't giving away a lot. He was sort of doing a little wry smile for most of the stuff. I think that puts you on the spot more.
Absolutely. In 2016, I got invited to go and host a BAFTA event in Los Angeles, and you know, it was like an A-list front row, like Samuel L. Jackson, Jennifer Lawrence, Tom Hanks, Jodie Foster, and I was obviously nervous about that. But I thought, when it comes to it, as long as I'm doing my thing, I'll be fine. It's an audience just like any other. It's not just like those guys. It'll be a room full of people. But because there were so many A-list people, there was so much compliance and legal stuff. So every other day while I was working over there, prepping for this gig, I'd have to go to this office and perform what I'd written so far for my like opening monologue, or like other bits that I might want to pepper into the bits in between awards, you know. I'd have to perform them to like a couple of guys in an office. And it was as horrible as that sounds. It is really similar to that mayor thing. You've got these guys who are sat there who their remit is like, let me just find what doesn't work, basically.
Yeah. They're not going, let's laugh along to give them a good gig in this office. Yeah. They're just listening to the words.
Horrendous.
And then you got out there on the night and the mayor was sat in the front row as well. Awful. but you didn't do the worst in this task, Ben.
Really?
No, you did not do the worst in this task. The mayor gave you 7 out of 10.
That's a sympathy vote, surely. Or he fancied.
Yeah, I think he liked Tony Bennett, and I think he threw yourself into the performance.
Oh, I definitely did that.
Yeah, for sure. Joe, of course, famously ran out of the office, and this wasn't filmed. He literally ran away from the camera crew and came back with 42 Calippos and 8 cans of strong lager.
Oh, yeah.
And the mayor didn't seem to... I don't think the mayor was that impressed by that. He gave that 7 out of 10. He gave the same as he gave you. So you, not only did you not come bottom, you drew with Joe. It was John who
feel like
John
I made
who
more
came
effort
bottom. Then oh, you definitely made more effort. You know, Joe did what Joe does, and bought 42 Calippos. It's classic Wilkinson.
It is, yeah.
John got bottom. John got 5 out of 10 from the mayor. He panicked. He really panicked, way more than you.
Really, is that possible?
Yeah, showed the mayor a picture of a pistachio eclair that he hadn't even made.
What?
He just had a picture of pistachio eclair on his phone, and he thought maybe the mayor will be impressed by the patisserie. Then he made the noise of a dolphin, and then he ends up singing Desperado by the Eagles.
Jesus.
It's really bad, because he also talks up the fact he's not going to sing. He doesn't want to sing. It'll be awful if he sings. And then he sings, which makes it so much more demeaning. The fact that he's talked about not singing for ages. And he refused to watch it back. He left the studio.
Well, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. I know exactly how he feels. Joe, presumably, unless he claimed expenses back from Taskmaster production, presumably had to declare 47 Calippos to his accountant at the end of that quarter. As a legitimate business expense.
I'd imagine that's the tip of the iceberg when it comes to Joe's business expenses.
Yeah.
I bet his accountant didn't bat an eyelid when 42 Calippos came in.
Yeah.
Catherine and Richard both got 8 out of 10. Catherine, very impressive, made him a cup of tea and then performed a rap. See, look, Catherine did a rap. You could have written
outrageous.
A rap. You could have written a rap about the mayor.
I don't remember that either. I guess I just wiped that day from my memory in terms of, you know, what else happened. I just remember those two events for me and both of them being soul-destroying.
Richard wrote a poem about the mayor. So Richard's version of rap.
Mm.
And he did it whilst juggling, you know. I love how much you still have disdain for anyone doing anything that's half good on this, don't you?
No, I just have so much bitterness and resentment around that day, and I just remember thinking, this isn't worth the money.
I just do not want to sing you a song. I just feel like if I sing and dance in here,
yeah,
I have to live with myself and my wife has to live with me.
That is true.
And that is in jeopardy if I sing.
If I Google impressive things.
Holy shit. This hasn't gone how I hoped, Peter. I'm not going to lie to you.
Now you can leave. You can leave the mayor task now in your past forever.
Thank God.
Now, Ben.
Great, that's
it's gone.
Fantastic.
It's gone.
Sleep easy tonight.
But unfortunately, we may. Let's see if we can dig up some more horrific things for you.
Sure, you can.
Task two: make the most unexpected silhouette on this screen. You have 30
God.
Minutes.
I can't remember what I made, but I remember it was shit. All right, let's move on to the task three.
Now I'm gonna back you up on this because I think unexpected was too ambiguous a word.
Right.
But apparently what they wanted was something where you look at it before it's projected onto the screen, and
you never
you
would
can't work out
what
it's
it
gonna
would,
be.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So you used a saw, a skull, a blood splatter shape, and obviously as soon as everyone saw that from behind said, oh, it's going to look like a deer with its head cut off. And you called it Why. It had a title. It was a piece of art. And I think it looked great when it was projected. But
did it?
Yeah, I thought it was unexpected in that no one would expect you to do that. But from when looking at the things, obviously you knew what it was going to be.
Again,
I back you.
As somebody who in school didn't concentrate on anything outside of drama and English, I think I probably took that in a very like drama English student type of way, you know, like unexpected. So the scene that you create needs to be like a tale of the unexpected. Do you know what I mean?
That's, sure.
That, thinking back, that's probably what I did.
But it was unexpected for me. I think if they'd shown the projection first and then said, "Did you expect Ben to do that?" I would say no. I didn't expect that sort of that horrific scene to unfold. Whereas Joe, for example, had a big like smiley face, like a big rave face. But you looked at the elements of that and you knew exactly what it was going to be. But for some reason, he got away with it.
Well, he's quirky, innit? You get away with a lot if you're quirky. Do you know what I mean? No one can really see your expressions because your entire face is covered in hair. You get away with all sorts of shit.
I like that this started off with you saying, oh, I love all of them. They're such great people. And now it's like, fuck Joe Wilkinson. Fuck John Richardson. Richard used a bin lid, a bowl and a statuette and called it Moon Truth. Catherine had a big Lion King outtakes, she called it. This was actually my favourite. She created a whole scene. Didn't go down very well with Greg. Did you find yourself appealing to Greg to try and get points? Were you ever trying to work out what he liked?
My memory is that I got a little riled because I'm competitive. My memory is that I was probably quite standoffish with Greg. Like a lot of people come up to me in the street and say, do you eat eggs these days? I never know what they mean. And they say, oh, because you're not an egg man. You remember you're like, you're not this man, you're not that man to Greg the whole time. And I do actually, I remember like Greg saying things like, oh, what do you think about this? And me just going, nah. And, you know, the school of comedy improvisation will tell you like, yes, and like if someone's throwing something at you, you just go, you agree. And then you throw something on top of it and you share the funny. Do you know what I mean? But I think there was definitely a stage in shooting that series where Greg would be like, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And be like, oh, fuck off. I don't know. I don't care.
John in this task used a red balloon, a mannequin and blue tack and he called it the Lost Balloon. He did like a little art film about a child losing a balloon.
Yeah,
I did not
that.
Like it.
No,
I didn't like it, Ben.
Pretentious.
It was pretentious, but he didn't believe it. I don't believe that John wants to make that sort of thing. So no. I think he was trying to appeal to some artistic part in Greg's brain, and it worked. He got the 5 points, unbelievably.
That's ridiculous.
Richard Osman with the 4 points. Joe Wilkinson with the 3 points. 2 points for Catherine Ryan. And unfortunately, Why by Doc Brown received 1 point.
There was subtext behind that title, I'll tell you that much. Fucking hell.
Why? Because Alex took you for a coffee and asked. Task three. Here is £20. Buy a gift for the taskmaster. You have 20 weeks. Do you remember this this decision?
I've no recollection whatsoever what I bought for Greg, but I do remember like asking, because I never knew Greg on the circuit. You know, I'd seen his shows and stuff, but I didn't know him like that. Like most comics, you know, I would have had a beer with at least once or twice if I didn't know them better. So I'd know like a couple of things about. I didn't know anything about Greg. So it was a case of asking comics who knew him or like Googling and stuff. And I can't remember where I got the information from, but I found out something about where he was from or something. So I remember bought him something personal related
to that.
Yeah,
it was a cricket bat and a helmet because him and his sister used to play a game called Mad Helmet Murderer. Where one of them used to bash the other on the head with a cricket bat whilst they were wearing a helmet.
That's the one.
And I think you pitched it perfectly. You did research, which is, you know, way more than a lot of other people did. And you appealed to his love of family.
Nostalgia.
And his nostalgia and memories of his family. I think it was very, very, very well pitched indeed.
Did I lose again? What happened?
You got three points, even worse than losing. Just right down the middle.
It's too nice to say it's shit, but it's also too nice to be actually funny or interesting.
No, I don't think that's true. Because also, Richard Osman won money on the darts with the £20 and then donated it to a charity and got a woman who worked for the charity to record a message thanking Greg.
That's sickening.
It is sickening, and I can't believe Greg fell for it. In my memory, he'd given that 0 points just to make a sort of wild point.
But it's two Great Danes together, isn't it?
They like the smell of each other's balls. It's the two big slobbery Great Danes. So it was 5 points for the charity donation. Catherine Ryan with an excellent gift, which was a square foot of land that makes Greg Davis now Lord Greg Davis.
That's pretty cool.
I think that appeals to his ego perfectly. Yes. And if he'd put the charity thing below that, I think that would have told us too much about the man. And he is a nice man, really.
That's very true.
John Richardson got the 1 point because he bought him a cookbook and 701 penny sweets.
How the fuck did I not beat John Richardson over the course of the whole series? It sounds like he's just like shit at everything.
It's not a strong app for John, to be fair. Yeah, that's not good. And Joe Wilkinson bought him a pair of antique water skis. So there you go. Joe's one of the only Taskmaster contestants. I can't see the thought process in anything he's done.
Yeah, but that's Joe, you know. That is Joe in a nutshell.
Very true. Very true.
He should be a murderer. Like, he should try and do like high end crime, because you could just see the police procedural trying to get inside his head. It's the massive wall of photos and strings on pins for some reason, trying to connect Joe Wilkinson to the crime.
He'd be a good Sherlock baddie, wouldn't he? But he'd be like a proper nemesis
unreadable.
For Sherlock.
Unreadable.
Completely unreadable, but then turns up back at the crime scene with a bag full of Calippos. The team task. I'd be interested to hear what you thought of the team task. Do you have any recollection from the team tasks days?
No. Was that where did we get together, or did they bring old contestants back? Or I remember them bringing other contestants in at some point.
So you were in a team with. It's so funny how little of this you remember. By the way, it's really making me laugh.
I wiped it.
Is it a case of wiping it, or do you just not remember stuff?
No, I remember all the good shit from my career, absolutely. And my love life, friendships, nights out. I remember a lot, man.
Well, you were on a team with Catherine and Joe.
Right.
And in this task, one of you had to put on a blindfold, one of you had to put earplugs in, and one of you couldn't read anything out loud. And one of you was in a bandstand, and you had to work out how to get a potato from one person to the bandstand, but you all could only either
right
hear yeah. or okay. see. Or,
yeah, I know. Remember this. Yeah. yeah.
Anyway, you got 0 points. So Richard and John were on a team, but on this occasion they had Josh Widdicombe come back from Series 1 to be on a team with them
yes.
to bolster up the numbers, which mm-hmm. I think is I found a little bit unfair, perhaps, because he won the first series, so you know he'd been to this rodeo before,
right? So they had a champ.
They had a champ, and they nailed it pretty quickly. They did it to me. It wasn't that far off. They did it in 4:59, and you guys did it in 5:49.
Mm.
So it wasn't bad.
Not bad. But I'm sure it was just another task that ended with me screaming up at the heavens, "Let's skim some stones, motherfucker! We'll see where we stand!"
Show me! Show me!
Is that a potato? Doesn't
that looks like an onion!
An onion? Shit. All right, hold on.
The studio task. This is the final task in the episode.
Right.
You had to throw rabbits into a hat. The person with the most rabbits in their hat after 100 seconds wins. The belts must stay tied around the wrists. How did you find these studio tasks? They're always quite sort of frenetic and quite full on and quite competitive.
Yeah, I mean, again, you would never have seen me at my best. I would have thought, you know, to have the added pressure. I mean, it's just like all the other tasks, right? I found them hard, but like yeah. have the added pressure of a live studio audience. Yeah, I've no idea what happened, but I'm sure it wasn't good.
Well, actually, you did pretty well on this one. You got 12 rabbits, which is the same as Joe. The problem is Catherine got 15 rabbits, and you won't know this, Ben, but this was a hugely controversial task right. within the show, because in the reading of the task, they say it's a point per rabbit, right? But then everyone assumed that the person with the most rabbits would then just get 5 points in the series. But right. what they did was it was a series point per rabbit, which wasn't properly explained to them.
That's fucking
Catherine,
bullshit.
Catherine then got 15 more series points, which basically took her into the lead and won her the show. I know for a fact that John Richardson and Richard Osman are still livid about that to this day, and cornered the
still
production
lodging
staff
appeals.
After. They're still lodging appeals. Whenever they see them, it'll come up. They, you know, screaming at people in green rooms. John Richardson absolutely losing his mind. You seem less bothered by it.
Listen, everything I've done in my career is like a little piece of me and where I am now, and as much as I hated almost every minute of doing it, it's easy for me to look back now and laugh and appreciate the sort of positive effect it had on either my fans or people who'd never heard of me before. Like I say, it's probably the number three thing people stop me on the street and talk about.
Yeah.
So I absolutely respect it, and I love Alex to death. So it's just one of those things that for me, I can look back and laugh.
We've had some emails. A lot of them we've covered, to be fair. It was Simon in Battersea asked, do you ever get public abuse for going against Joe in the potato throw task? Does that ever come up with people?
I never get that. And that never happens. You know what I feel like in terms of trying to judge over the years where the energy is coming from for people who stop me in the street and ask stuff about Taskmaster, I would say it seems overwhelmingly sympathetic. I feel like a lot of the people who watched that, when they watched me failing, they thought of themselves. They
yeah.
just thought, oh shit, that would be me, you know? So I can't say I've ever got anything negative. It's mainly people going, bruv, why didn't you see that bridge? You know, I felt for you so much. So it's always lovely. I have to say, it's always lovely.
Oh,
I'm,
that's
I'm lucky,
good.
I'm lucky like that, really.
It's a nice fan base as well. We had an email from Carrie in Brighton who says, can you perform the William Tell overture just using your hands and cheeks? How long did it take you to think of this task for John?
It's very similar to the Tony Bennett thing. If someone just goes like, do something now, quickly, you know, make these kids smile. It will be the William Tell overture on my cheeks. It will be juggling or it will be singing Rags to Riches. Like that, those are like my go-to like party tricks.
And you, so you can, to answer Carrie's question, you can do the William Tell overture on.
Oh yeah,
on
absolutely.
Your
I've been doing it since I was, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old. I don't know why, and I can't remember where I got it from. Yeah, absolutely. There you go.
Absolutely love it. What I love about that is you didn't stop at the first basic bit. You
no,
then,
I,
you
I
took
thought
it up,
throw the bridge
you did the
in
whole
there.
Thing. Yeah, absolutely. Finally, you found the bridge. Thank you. So, Ben, I always get the guest on the Taskmaster podcast to rate their experience on the podcast between 1 and 5 points. Now, we're not going to ask you to rate your experience on Taskmaster in general, just specifically Great. This podcast. Have I in some way redeemed what happened to you on Taskmaster?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a 5 out of 5 experience for me. And I think it's something that I should have done a long time ago. It's I look at it a lot like I look at therapy. You know, when I was in therapy, I thought, why wasn't I doing this in my 20s? This is fucking brilliant. Like, just talk it out. All the things you feel anxious about, unsure about, or things that are out of control in your life, just talk about it. And then the other person goes, that's fine, man. You're going to be fine. You know,
I needed
to do that with Taskmaster. And how many years has it been?
5 years. So
5 years. There you go.
Summer,
so I've been harboring that resentment for 5 years. So it's important that we've had this conversation. I won't be paying you, but I do appreciate it.
Also, it's just too specific to take to a therapist, some of this stuff.
It is.
I think.
It is very. What does this picture make you think? Just a big picture of Greg Davis in a throne.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast, Ben.
It's a pleasure.
Is he all right? Is he all right? That's all I've got. I mean, it was so nice to see Ben. It was lovely to have a chat with him. But I feel like Taskmaster may have affected him negatively in quite a few ways. But it's, I'll be honest, that episode made me laugh so much. I had such a nice time catching up with Ben. We have not had anyone so far who said they didn't enjoy themselves on Taskmaster, and it's just good to have both sides of the coin. Joe Wilkinson, I'd say the side of the coin. He didn't express any love or any hatred for the process. He just waffled on, and that's what you want from Joe Wilkinson. But what you want, apparently, from Ben Bailey-Smith is genuine mental torture. That mayor task in particular appears to have scarred him for life. So apologies, Ben. He's deleted the rest of his memories about Taskmaster, but he can't shift that one. That is like a bloodstain that he is desperately scrubbing away out on the carpet, and it's never going to go anywhere. So sorry. But great news for you, Ben Bailey-Smith has written a new book. He is a prolific author, and he has written a new book which is being published by Bloomsbury. It's called Something I Said. It's out on the 10th of June, and I'm just reading a little synopsis of it now, and it looks really fun. Why don't you go and get it? It's called Something I Said. It's out on the 10th of June. Don't forget to keep emailing the Taskmaster podcast, taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com, with your questions. And next week's guest is Kerry Godleman from Series 7, of course, not from Series 2, but we like to get some other opinions from previous contestants and competitors, Series 7, and also one episode in Series 9, which we might talk about. So it'd be lovely to have a chat with Kerry. She is not normally slow to give an opinion, so hopefully she absolutely lays the smackdown on some of these fools in Series 2. So email your questions for Kerry, taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com. Keep watching the episodes on all four. Hit up the Taskmaster YouTube. Loads of fun content still coming out on there. There was a compilation released recently called Pain and Puke, which I've not watched yet, but I can't wait. We will see you next week for another Taskmaster podcast. Until then, stay fresh.
Desperado. Why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now, and you're a hard one. I know that you've got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you sometime. Still less impressed than
the fucking photo of an eclair. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay. Oh, God.